well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be joined by our friend Mark Walters from Armed American Radio. Another Mondays with Mark here in a moment or two, talking about some of the big Second Amendment news. So this morning, we did get the orders list from the Supreme Court. No new Second Amendment cases granted cert, but none denied either. So last Thursday, the court scheduled to hear, I believe it was four, challenges to age-related gun bans, right? Paris versus SAF deals with a carry ban in Pennsylvania for 18, 19, 20-year-olds. Then you had McCoy versus ATF. Reese was actually out of the Fifth Circuit. The DOJ decided not to appeal that case. There were two cases out of the Fourth Circuit, including the West Virginia Citizens Defense League versus ATF. And then McCoy versus ATF. And then the case out of Florida, NRA versus Glass, which is the challenge to Florida's ban on commercial gun sales for 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. All gun sales, long guns too, not just handguns, which are the subject of the challenges out of the Fourth Circuit. Anyway, Supreme Court didn't take any action on those cases. Presumably, they will be relisted. They will be discussed once again in this week's conference. We also do have a couple of other cases, though, that are scheduled for a conference coming up on this Thursday. Let me call that up here because that's worth considering, too. Again, a several cases, Vincent versus Bondi, Duarte versus United States, which both deal with, well, Vincent versus Bondi and Duarte deal with the ban on firearm possession for anybody convicted of a crime punishable by more than a year in prison. And then there is Carbajal Flores versus United States, which challenges a different prohibited person statute. The question there is whether 922G5A, which prohibits firearm possession by all unlawfully present non-citizens, is unconstitutional on its face under the Second Amendment's test in history. So in other words, if you're in this country illegally, do you have a right to keep and bear arms? All of those scheduled, again, to be heard in conference this Thursday, along with NRA versus Glass, presumably NRA versus Glass, Paris versus ATF, McCoy versus ATF, West Virginia Citizens Defense League versus ATF. As we've discussed in the past, I think there's I'd love to see every one of these cases granted cert. I think we stand a really good chance of actually seeing the court take one or more of the age-related cases because we've got some circuit court splits on the issue. I would love for the Supreme Court to take Vincent versus Bondi, just because I've never met Melinda Vincent. I don't even think I've ever spoken to Melinda Vincent, but her story is so compelling. I think it was 17 years ago. She wrote a bad check. She was, at the time, a homeless drug addict. The check was for about $400. Since then, she has turned her life around. She has conquered addiction. She is now a counselor herself. She has a private practice, but she also works with the state of Utah. She's a single mom. She would like to own a firearm for self-protection, but also to go shooting with her kids to teach them how to be safe and responsible firearm owners. And she can't. So, I mean, here is somebody who is making positive contributions to society. But because of this federal statute, she's precluded from keeping and bearing arms. The government's position is that, A, the statute is fine, but B, that Melinda Vincent, if she really wants to own a gun, can wait for this proposed rule to be finalized, and she can, once that this rule is finalized, there'll be a process where she can apply to the Attorney General to have her rights restored. And that should suffice if she wants to regain her Second Amendment rights. I don't agree with that, because the situation not only, we're talking about a proposed rule. It's not in effect yet. Presumably it will be at some point in time, but that rule could also be rescinded in future administrations, right? There's nothing stopping the next Democrat president from saying, yeah, we don't want to fund this program. So yoink, we're taking this federal money out and you can't apply for a restoration of your rights to the Attorney General. But more importantly, there's a question beyond just Melinda Vincent's case. And the question is, should everybody who's been convicted of a crime punishable by more than a year in prison, regardless of what that offense is, be automatically prohibited from keeping and bearing arms? And I would argue no. Not only do we have the case of Melinda Vincent, the case of Brian Range in Pennsylvania, he falsified his income on a food stamp application, got sentenced to probation, but he could have been sentenced to more than a year in jail. And so he lost his Second Amendment rights. The Third Circuit said that was unconstitutional. The Trump administration decided not to appeal that case. So that's good news for Brian Range. And good news for those folks living in the Third Circuit under similar circumstances. But this really is an issue that the Supreme Court needs to take on and address sooner rather than later. I think Melinda Vincent's case is a great way to do it. The Duarte case, similar circumstances. Maybe not quite as compelling a story, but Stephen Duarte, again, convicted of nonviolent offenses, more than one, and more recently than Melinda Vincent, but still convicted of nonviolent offenses, should he too forevermore lose his right to keep and bear arms? So that's what we're watching at the court this week. We're also keeping our eyes on what is going on in the state of Virginia. Today is the day when bills can start to be pre-filed. Now, there's deadline doesn't stop until January, until right before the session begins. So we will be seeing bills filed over the next almost 2 months before the session begins. But I do expect to see some of the first gun control bills drop this week in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And of course, when the 2026 session begins, you're going to have a Democrat governor. You're going to have a Democrat lieutenant governor, Democrat AG. You're going to have a House of Delegates with a supermajority of Democrats. And you're going to have a state Senate with a two-seat Democrat majority. I would say if gun control bills stall out in Virginia this year, that's where they'll stall, will be in the state Senate. But I'm not really anticipating that, to be quite honest. Last year, Democrats, again, had very narrow control of the House of Delegates. I think a one-seat majority. Had that 21-19 majority in the state Senate. And they still passed well over a dozen gun control bills. The year before, they sent, I believe, something like 30 gun control bills to Governor Glenn Youngkin's desk, where he vetoed the vast majority of them. But I got to say, I am not confident at all that the narrow control of the state Senate is going to serve to be much of a firewall in Virginia. But we're going to be talking more about that later on in the week. Right now, let's get to our conversation with Armed American Radio host Mark Walters. Take a look and a listen. Mark Walters, how are you, my friend? Thanks for coming on the program.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today, Cam. It's always a pleasure, brother.
I always feel like we're kind of just stretching the weekend out a little bit, getting to talk with you on Monday morning. So, again, I appreciate this very much. Sunday Night MonsterCast, as I was introducing you, I was talking about the orders list from the Supreme Court, which came down about 10 o'clock Monday morning. No Second Amendment cases granted, cert, none denied either. So all of the four age-related cases that the Supreme Court slated to hear in conference last Thursday, I guess they're going to keep those around for at least another week. I feel pretty good that the Supreme Court's got to take at least one of those cases. This Thursday, they are supposed to consider a couple more prohibited person cases. And then waiting in the wings, you've got multiple challenges to bans on so-called assault weapons and large capacity magazines, right? You've got the Connecticut cases. You've got the Cook County gun ban case. You've got Gators Customs Guns and Duncan versus Bono, which both deal with state level mag bans. So if Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who said earlier this year that the Supreme Court was likely to take up a hardware case the next term or two, if he's right, I mean, there's no shortage of cases for the court to choose from this term.
Yeah, I talked with Gottlieb about this very issue last night in the opening two segments of my program on Armed American Radio. And in the second hour, we followed that up with a lengthy discussion with Jared Yanis over at Guns and Gadgets. And it was interesting because Jared did a really, really deep dive in one of his latest videos about the kind of the nuances about the Connecticut case. And when you read that case, have you read that cert petition? I'm assuming you have.
I have, yeah.
Look at that. When you go into that, and you, and I've read it like three or four times, there's little things begin to pop out at you on there. And if anybody wants to read that petition, I would direct them over to the, you know, the first 5 to 6 pages and then drop down to page 30. I read the whole thing. But it, within those two page groups, there's really a lot of nuance about, just as Jared calls it, it's a very, very clean case. It asks one simple question: are these guns illegal or not? So it's very, very simple. There's not a whole lot going on there. And it presents the court with their own words in three previous cases, going back to Heller, McDonald, and Bruin, because you've got the 14th Amendment in McDonald, of course, mm-hmm. a Second Amendment case in 14th to the states. And then, of course, you have Heller, which talks about guns in common use cannot be banned. And then you go into the Bruin case here in this post-Bruin environment, which you and I have talked about many, many times. That's why we've got this onslaught of cases up before the Supreme Court seeking cert right now, because of Bruin in a post-Bruin environment. The court has had enough time to look at some of these other cases and what the lower courts are doing. And here we're 3 years into this now. Okay. So the court's ready to make a decision, we think. In the Connecticut case, let's back up and talk about that Fourth Circuit case that you and I talked about, the Snopes case.
Mm-hmm.
That was we use the words slam dunk, a no-brainer. You know, I joked about it last night. I would have lost a lot of money on that if I had bet in Vegas, because I thought for sure they were going to take the case. And as you know, the Connecticut case is interlocutory. And the reason it is because there has not been, it's still, the Connecticut case is still moving. It's ongoing. Whereas the Fourth Circuit case had resolved itself to finality, which would have made it a prime case for the Supreme Court to take. For whatever reason, they did not. Then you alluded to Kavanaugh, and we find ourselves here with Connecticut with this very simple question. These guns are in common use. It refers back to the F-150 pickup trucks. It goes into everything that this is. It's more popular than F-150 pickup trucks, which is the number one most popular truck in America. So it lays out in very, uncertain terms for the court that you have to rule that these guns are in common use based on your own precedent in the previous three cases. And to not do so is causing more problems across the country than it is not, because this question must be answered. And if you go down to page 30 on that brief, it then begins to bring up the unusual and dangerous aspect, because, of course, the court has said that a weapon can only be banned if it is both dangerous and unusual. Mm-hmm. And it proves and lays out in the cert petition that the AR-15 is not, but two lower courts have held that it is. So this case is clean. It's ripe for the taking. So I get back to circle, maybe pull the whole Jen Psaki thing and get back to Gottlieb's comments. I said, if you were forced to determine whether it would be the Cook County case, Illinois, or whether it would be the Connecticut case, which one would you think is going to make it? He says, I don't care. Either one of them will solve the problem. It really doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
He said, you're right when you look at the Connecticut case, because it is a very, very clean case with that one question. And it does go directly to their own precedent. So again, we all feel good about it, but I have to say, we all felt good about the Fourth Circuit as well.
Yeah, right. And so there are, you know, I was talking with Holly Sullivan from Connecticut Citizens Defense League about this case last week. And you're right that it is, you know, that this is basically, it's amazing because this case is 3 years old, but we are still talking about a denial of an injunction. Mm-hmm. So this case has not been tried on the merits. And ordinarily and historically, you know, that has cut against us in the past. But Wolford versus Lopez, which the Supreme Court has already granted cert to this term, that too is an interlocutory case at this point. And the Supreme Court has said we're going to address this issue. So, you know, I don't know how much that actually hurts us. The other issue, too, is the rationale that the court deployed here, right? So you get into this dangerous and unusual, which the mm-hmm. Second Circuit interpreted as unusually dangerous, and then essentially said it's up to the legislature to decide.
Well, there you go.
What arms are unusually dangerous, right? But the Second Circuit talked about and completely, and I think intentionally, misread what the Supreme Court has said, because the Second Circuit basically said only those arms that are in common use for active self-defense are protected by the Second Amendment. Now think about that for a second, Mark. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would mean that essentially handguns are the only protected arms, right? That, you know, your bolt action, it flips the gun control script, quite honestly, because for decades we heard that the only guns that may be acceptable are like those, you know, single barrel shotguns, maybe a bolt action hunting rifle, nothing that would be useful for self-defense, though, right? And now you've got the Second Circuit saying, no, those are the only guns that actually are protected by the Second Amendment, ignoring every other lawful purpose for firearms, and again, ignoring Supreme Court precedent. So the cert petition does lay out how this decision conflicts with what the Supreme Court has said, as you noted. Yes. And the Seventh Circuit has kind of fallen into that same trap as well, right? Fourth Circuit, you know, they said, well, AR-15s, they're like machine guns, and machine guns aren't protected by the Second Amendment, so AR-15s aren't either. Seventh Circuit has also used this unusually dangerous language, misinterpreting what the Supreme Court has said. I don't know if it's going to be Vera Mattis. I don't know if it's going to be one of the Connecticut cases. Besides the CCDL-SAF case, Nagar also has a case challenging both the gun ban in Connecticut and the mag ban.
Now, that's a Vermontese case, right?
No, Vera Mattis is the Cook County case.
Okay.
Yeah. Nagar versus Lamont is the Connecticut case.
Let me back up with you here for just a second, because you mentioned the legislative process here. And part of what came up in the discussion yesterday was exactly that. And the cert petition lays out very clearly that when you leave this up to the legislative body, where does it stop? At what point do they determine another gun is unusual and dangerous? And let's use Glock as a great example here, okay? Specifically because of what California did. Glock made changes with their, you know, the new 17V, the new models, the V models, 5, whatever you want to call them, whatever they are. And according to the cert petition, which again, as you said, flips it right back, okay? Very, very important, because the legislative bodies are not the ones that make the decision on this. The court has to make the decision on this based on Second Amendment issues, and they've gone back to the historical precedent issue. So it makes no sense whatsoever that these guns can be banned, again, using the precedent set individually in each case. What did Heller deal with? Heller dealt with handguns in Washington, D.C. So if the AR-15, and again, I want to say what Alan said, because I think it's important to interject it here. The court won't take the case to uphold a lower court. They'll just let it stand. If they take the case, we win it. That's what he said last night, flat out. If they take the case, they're not taking it to uphold a lower court's ban on guns. They would just let that stand and not take the case and let this continue to play out. He says, if they take one of these cases, which I believe they're going to, and Kavanaugh has said they didn't signal they were going to, then we're going to win the case. But legislatively, where does it stop, Cam? At what point do they determine that, okay, well, you know, Glocks might be in common use.
Mm-hmm.
Glock is a handgun. Are we talking about a brand? Or are we talking about the firearm itself? Now, we know what the anti-gunners are going to do. They're going to use an easily modifiable brand to go after piece by piece by piece until they determine, or another legislative body in a blue state determines, well, this one can be modified, this one can be modified, this one can be modified. Therefore, it doesn't matter if they're in common use, they're dangerous and usual and unusual. They fit the dangerous and unusual. It's never going to end, which is why the cert petition at the end laid out, you have to answer this question. It's causing more problems by not doing so. This court has laid out precedent. Follow your precedent and grant cert in this case.
And, you know, we're seeing this on a you know, case by case basis now with Glock, as you mentioned, and now Ruger's a pistol that's, you know, very similar to Glock. But, you know, the gun control lobby is also making this argument for basically all semi-automatic long guns, right? That they are readily convertible to machine guns. So, I mean, I think they're happy to use to go after this, you know, a class of firearms as well. In the case of handguns, I don't think they can. I think the Supreme Court has kind of foreclosed that by Heller. But, you know, we've seen this argued in civil litigation by Brady and others. And I suspect we're going to see this legislatively as well, that, you know, well, AR-15s, you can put in an auto sear, you can illegally convert it to a full auto. Therefore, they're readily converted to machine guns. Therefore, they're not protected by the Second Amendment, and we can ban them. In fact, I kind of worry that we're going to see something like that in my state of Virginia this year, depending on.
you're gonna. You know, I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you for reminding me of that. I'm utterly shocked at this point that we haven't yet seen, and I used the bump stock as an example last night on the program. You remember the bump stock fight, right? Well, do you need a bump stock to bump fire an AR? You do not. You can use, you've seen the videos, they're everywhere. Rubber bands, belt loops, fingers. I mean, it's easy to do if you know how to do it, okay? And then that's where the left comes out and says, okay, well, you know, I think the entire class of semi-automatic, as far as the AR-15, the AR-15 has been misclassified because it's capable of firing rapid fire, even without this modification of a bump stock to it. Therefore, we're going to argue that they should be banned because they are dangerous and unusual, because they can be bump fired in their current manufactured state without any additional modifications to them. Therefore, it really is a machine gun. And we haven't seen that argument yet. But again, that's what's laid out in the cert petition in CCDL case SAF. And that is, where does this stop legislatively? If you don't answer this question, this is never, ever, ever going to end. And I'm actually shocked we haven't seen that yet. But then you go back to the Glocks again, you know, the handguns. You're right. Heller laid out firmly that the handguns cannot be banned. But that doesn't stop the left from doing what? Going after individual brands because of potential modifications. And you mentioned Ruger as well. They admit that there's never been one Ruger that they can point to that's ever been modified that they're aware of, yet they're now pressuring Ruger because they felt they were successful with Glock. It's a whole convoluted process, but the court has got to step in. Now, I'm gonna do what I did in the Fourth Circuit here. I probably shouldn't, but I'm going to bet that that Connecticut case is taken. I'm going to bet you it is because of Kavanaugh's writing. Now, that's not speculation. In the Fourth Circuit Snopes case, you and I were speculating. Everybody in the business was speculating about what might happen. And as we all know, it's nearly impossible to second guess the court.
Yeah.
But when you've got a flat out statement from Kavanaugh in the next term or two, is telling us, essentially signaling we're going to take one, the Connecticut case is clear and as simple as it is, as clean as it is, would to me appear to be a prime target for the court to take. That doesn't mean I'm right. I'm just saying it's a guess.
All right. I'm gonna bet against you on this.
Go for it.
I think it is a clean case. I suspect, because I do think that the Supreme Court is likely going to take one of these age ban cases. Mm-hmm. So that means three Second Amendment cases this term. I don't know if they're all that eager to take a fourth. And I suspect that there are a number of justices who are waiting for the New Jersey cases, which again, our gun and magazine ban cases, oral arguments held about a month or so ago in these cases. And all indications are that the Third Circuit Court of Appeals is going to strike down New Jersey's ban. And that would create that circuit court split. Supreme Court does like to have those splits, right? They like to have the lower courts disagreeing. That, depending on when the oral when the opinion is issued, I mean, a cert petition could be filed, you know, next February, March. I mean, it'll be filed like that once the opinion comes down, right? And the Third Circuit, I don't think, is going to sit on this for a year like we saw with the Fourth Circuit and Snope.
No, that court has been flipped by Donald Trump, and it's important to point that out. But I also want to throw Virginia in here as well, too. And I know exactly where you're going with this. I don't disagree with you. If I hear you correctly, you're saying they might not take it this term, but they might wait another term to take a case after New Jersey, right?
Yeah, I think they'll take the New Jersey case whenever that comes up. I think they're going to wait.
Yeah, no, that logic works as well, too. You know, one of us is going to be right. And I don't care who it is.
Hopefully one of us will be right, because if we're both wrong, then they still don't take it. They don't get either of those cases.
We have to get this resolved. What I find interesting, you throw this little monkey wrench in. I don't know how many justices live in Virginia, if any do. I don't know. But they're very well aware of the elections in Virginia. They're very well aware of what the Democrats are getting ready to do, particularly to the AR-15. They have a cert. They have two cases seeking cert on this. Jersey's out there wavering. I don't think they're going to wait. But again, I could be wrong. Maybe they wait to see what Virginia does at the start of a legislative session and push it off to another term. But we're already post-Bruin, and these cases are lining up like crazy. The court's in a good position to take one and answer that question now. But again, I don't disagree with you either. You just got to look at these things and kind of deduce in your own mind what you think is going to happen. And it's fun to talk about, but you know, we just got to wait and see.
Yeah, you can still be wrong. I mean, listen, you know, I would have bet the same way you did on Snope. I mean, this was a case that the court, you know, GVR, they granted cert, they vacated the lower court decision, they remanded it back to the Fourth Circuit after Bruin. shows they had an interest in that case, right? They held it in conference. They'd have been in for what, like 15 weeks, something like that. There were every indication was that Snopes was going to be the vehicle, and then it wasn't. So you're right. It's fun to speculate. I think you and I are making semi-informed opinions here. But again, at the end of the day, it's up to five justices sitting in a room. We don't get to hear these deliberations. We don't get to know what's said. Four justices to agree to hear the case, five to win. And if they don't have that fifth vote, like Alan said, they're not going to take that case unless they've got that fifth vote, right? So it really is up to five justices, and we're just kind of playing along and waiting to see what they do. Right.
Well, there's more fun because part of what you and I talked about while the Fourth Circuit case was ongoing was when we realized that it wasn't granted cert. One of the issues that came up was, well, it only takes four justices. We know Alito, we know Thomas, likely Kavanaugh, Barrett. We weren't sure because, again, we'll never know. But was there a wishy-washy justice in there that we weren't sure of? And, of course, we kind of point the finger at Roberts on that. But then you look back and you speculate and you think, well, wait a minute. He's ruled in favor in all three Second Amendment cases, that being going back to 08 Heller. Let's not forget that. McDonald in 2010 and, of course, Bruin, the latest case. So would it have been him? Was there a fear that one of the other justices might not? Is that why they didn't grant cert? Again, we'll never know that.
Right.
But this kind of changes the dynamic a little bit. If you look back, we got the benefit of high-definition vision here. I don't believe it much as it was a wishy-washy justice at this point, as it was the court was still waiting to see how, knowing these other cases were coming up, to see what happened. And I'm kind of hopeful, because it is fun to speculate, that maybe what happened in Virginia might just be that little extra blast of wind in the sails that tells the justices, look, clearly we have got to get off our duffs on this and answer this question, which they do. And again, to circle back to Alan, I don't care what case it is, the moment they take one, we're going to win it, or they wouldn't have taken the case to uphold a lower court. They would have just let it stood. So I'm hopeful, and I would love to see it. Imagine the party we'll have on Monday if we come back and find out, in a couple of weeks, that they took the CCDL case, all right? It'd be a fun conversation for sure. And we will have it in the near future. We will have this conversation.
We will. I do believe we will. It's just a matter of when. But until then, we always have our Mondays with Mark. You can check out DeMarc Walters, the Daily Defense on Armed American Radio, and then, of course, the Sunday Monster Cast. Mark, again, I always appreciate you joining us on the program on Monday mornings. It is fantastic talking with you. I love the conversation.
Always fun.
And look forward to doing this again very soon.
Thank you, Cam. Appreciate it, brother. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Mark Walters joins from Armed American Radio. You can find him at armedamericanradio.com. My thanks once again to Mark for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back. By the way, Congressman Andrew Clyde is going to be joining us on Wednesday's Bearing Arms Cam and Company, so be sure to tune in for that. Right now, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Houston, Texas. Fox News reporting on the Houston thug charged with murder after 8 arrests. And a GOP lawmaker there in the state of Texas calling this an example of a Harris County's revolving door failures. This is different, by the way, than the story we had out of Houston last week. So, again, no shortage of these stories, unfortunately, coming out of the Blue City. Gabriel Isaiah Menifee, 23 years old, according to police, shot and killed 25-year-old Jalen Ward during an argument back on November the 2nd. Menifee was arrested 4 days later, charged with murder in the 263rd Criminal District Court. And according to Fox News, Menifee, well-known to local law enforcement. Andy Kahan, Director of Victim Services and Advocacy for Crime Stoppers of Houston, telling Fox 26 that Menifee's criminal history reflects a pattern of leniency in the county court system, leniency that he believes may have cost Ward his life. He says every offense that Gabriel Menifee was involved in had one common denominator, a gun. Listen, if we're talking about pure possession, that's one thing. But we're not talking about pure possession. We're talking about crimes of violence. Court records obtained by Fox 26 show Menifee's first arrest came almost 6 years ago, March 2020. Charges of robbery and aggravated assault with serious bodily injury. Despite the serious nature of those charges, he was released on a personal recognizance bond. So he didn't have to post a penny. Just pledged to show up in court. He did But, by the way, in 2021, he was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. That time, he got freed on a $20,000 bond. Fox News says in October of 2022, Menifee received 4 years probation. They don't say for what charge, whether it was the robbery, aggravated assault with serious bodily injury, the aggravated assault with a weapon charge. Maybe it was both cases that he was able to resolve through a plea deal. We don't know. Anyway, in October 2022, he got 4 years probation, which he later violated. In October of 2024, he faced yet another aggravated assault charge, failed to appear in court. His probation was revoked. He went on the run. And apparently he's been on the run for over a year. Kahan says that Menifee, a known member of a local gang called Play No Games, was also linked to a 2024 shooting in a park that left bystanders, quote, fearing for their lives. He said that he and another gang member were shooting into a crowd at a park. State Senator Joan Huffman, who is running for attorney general there in the state of Texas, says that the Menifee's case is a, quote, tragic example of the failures that new laws in Texas are designed to prevent. She says this case exemplifies the revolving door in Harris County's bail system that SB 9 and SJR 5 aim to fix. Too often, she says, repeat violent offenders charged with felonies like murder or assault are released on low bonds only to re-offend. As of right now, Menifee remains in custody on a murder charge, but again, that could always change. And sadly, there are going to be more individuals like Mr. Menifee, not only in Harris County, but in court systems across the country. Today's Armed Citizen story comes to us from Illinois, where Democrats are working as hard as they can to make it impossible to act in self-defense. Home invasion leads to apartment shooting near Belleville, Illinois. Intruder shot, two hurt. This was over the weekend. It was a Saturday morning, just before noon, in St. Clair County, just outside of the Belleville city limits. According to KTVI in St. Louis and the St. Clair County Sheriff's Department, the ex-boyfriend of someone who is living at the apartment shows up there, kicks in the front door in order to get inside where he was not wanted. Moments later, sheriff's office says another man inside the apartment retrieved a weapon, fired several shots, striking the intruder multiple times. During the gunfire, a woman inside the apartment was also shot. Thankfully, her injuries deemed non-life-threatening. It's not clear whether or not she was shot, whether this was an example of friendly fire, whether the ex-boyfriend was armed with a gun himself and fired shots. That might actually be known to police at the time. St. Clair County Sheriff's Department says investigators continue to gather facts associated with this crime. But it is important to inform the public that there is no ongoing threat to our community. All persons of interest have been located. The intruder taken to a local hospital with what's described as critical injuries. Again, the woman's injuries deemed non-life-threatening. While the investigation continues, it's pretty clear this was an act of self-defense, right? Somebody kicks in the door of your apartment. They're not there to deliver Girl Scout cookies or drop off a package from Amazon. You have a reasonable belief that they are there to do you harm, or they are there to do harm to somebody inside that apartment. And I got to tell you, I mean, not that you need this reminder, but I just, you know, if you get dumped, move on. Just move on. Just move on with your life. Nothing good comes from trying to hold on to a relationship after someone has ended it. And this person, if they recover from their injuries, looking at significant charges, looking at time behind bars, they have ruined their life over what? Over what? You know, these road rage shootings, I think, are the most pointless, I don't want to say most pointless acts of self-defense, because they're not a pointless act of self-defense, but they're the most pointless act of aggression to me. You drive down the road and a block or two, you've forgotten what pissed you off. This is a close second, these types of domestic cases, a very close second. I don't care how angry you are. I don't care how wronged you might feel. You got dumped. Move on. Find somebody new. Instead of, again, trying to take somebody's life, trying to harm somebody, ended up ruining your own, possibly ended up ending your own. It doesn't make any sense to me. Finally today, our good deed of the day. Let's talk about some good news for something for a change here. From Georgia, Godsend Angels, man saved from drowning by three boys after an ATV crash. And I got to tell you, I mean, this really was pretty amazing. Worth County, Georgia. This was about a month ago, actually 1 month ago today, October 17th. George Etheridge, he's on an ATV. He's got a 25-gallon tank with some pesticides strapped to the back. He's spraying around a pond, and the ATV got too close to the bank, and it flipped. And he ends up underwater, trapped underwater, pinned by this ATV. He said, I couldn't move my arms or legs. He said, only half my head was above water. He said, I could pick my head up just enough to breathe and scream for help and then go back under. This went on for half an hour. Half an hour, this guy's laying there. Not even laying there, just trapped. Having to pick his head up just to take a breath, just to scream for help, pray that somebody would hear him. Well, there were three boys, young teens, Griffin McDonald, Bentley Culpepper, Colt Hartsfield. They were fishing, apparently at another nearby pond, a couple hundred yards away. But they heard him. So they ran towards the sound. They found Etheridge pinned under the ATV. They tried to lift it up themselves, but they couldn't do it. So then they ran to the nearest house for help. Etheridge's neighbor, Glenn Creamer, and his family rushed to the scene. Etheridge said Glenn jumped into the pond and became Superman. He said, with one try, no second grip, he flipped that four-wheeler off me like it was an air mattress. I imagine adrenaline. I mean, I don't know Glenn Creamer. Maybe he's just a jack dude, but I imagine adrenaline might have had something to do with that. Creamer was then able to pull Etheridge safely to shore. He was taken to local hospital. He had fractures in his shoulder and his back. He is thankfully expected to fully recover. And he thanks those the three teens. He says they're nothing less than heroes, just more proof that God's always with us. He is hoping that the community can help recognize Creamer, McDonald, and Culpepper and Hartsfield for their bravery and quick action. I would imagine that officials in Worth County, Georgia, would be able to do that. But if not, George Etheridge has certainly succeeded in help spreading the word about all four of these individuals in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. And again, George Creamer, Griffin McDonald, Bentley Culpepper, Colt Hartsfield. I know George Etheridge thanks you, and we thank you, too, for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. So the shutdown's over, and the big 74% off VIP sale is over as well. But the good news is, if you use the promo code FIGHT, when you go to BearingArms.com/subscribe, you can get 60% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership. No matter what tier support you choose, you're going to get some great benefits. And no matter what tier support you choose, you will be supporting the independent pro-secular journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and we greatly appreciate that support. Have a great rest of your Monday, as good as Mondays can be. We'll see you back here tomorrow for 2A Tuesday. Until then, be well. Safe and be free.